Welcome to the Biblical Literacy Broadcast, where we study the principles of historical, grammatical, and literary interpretation of Scripture. With today's lesson, here's Dr. Andrew Sargent.
For I have taken all this into my heart and explain it, that righteous men, wise men, and their deeds are in the hand of God. Man does not know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits him. It is the same for all. There is one fate for the righteous and for the wicked, for the good, for the clean, for the unclean, for the man who offers a sacrifice and for the one who does not sacrifice. As the good man is, so is the sinner. As the swearer, so is the one who is afraid to swear. This is an evil in all that is done under the sun, that there is one fate for all men. Furthermore, the hearts of the sons of men are full of evil, and insanity is in their hearts throughout their lives. Afterwards, they go to the dead. For whoever is joined with all the living, there is hope. Surely a living dog is better than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead do not know anything, nor have any longer a reward, for their memory is forgotten. Indeed, their love, their hate, their zeal have already perished, and they will no longer have a share in all that is done under the sun. Go then, eat your bread in happiness, drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. Let your clothes be white all the time, and let not oil be lacking on your head. Ecclesiastes is a notoriously difficult piece of wisdom literature born from a common ancient Near Eastern tradition. Now, the ancient Near East is basically Israel and everybody that lived around them. They all have a shared culture. They have shared experiences. Some are pagans and some are monotheists, but they all share a culture. Just like we share a culture with the Canadians, we're different in subtle ways, but we also have a great deal in common with them. Ancient Near Eastern wisdom is a concept, it is a movement, and it is a genre. A genre means a form or a type of literature. So as a genre, wisdom concerns the varied literary structures of particular books. Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Job, and some Psalms. Wisdom literature. Okay? Dedicated to disclosing the path to a successful life before God in this world. Wisdom literature almost exclusively has its focus on life here. Now, wisdom literature is prescriptive. That means it tells you what you ought to do. And it is descriptive. It tells you simply how things are and how they work. So they're prescriptive and descriptive writings that instruct in all areas of life, preparing people to face the world, to avoid its perils, to travel its sure ground with a sense of purposeful existence before God and with men. That's what wisdom literature is. Now, Ecclesiastes is being born out of this tradition, so we have to understand that the larger purpose of Ecclesiastes is going to play in with the larger purpose of wisdom literature in general. It is here to help you navigate the world well, to avoid its pitfalls, to travel its sure ground, to gain a sense of purposeful existence before God and with your fellow man. Now, more particularly, Ecclesiastes is what modern scholars call wisdom dialogue. Wisdom dialogues are a pill because it's not just a handful of true statements. It's a conversation. Like the book of Job is a conversation between Job, three of his friends, and a fourth guy who's sitting here watching the entire dialogue, and his friends say a lot of true things, and they say a lot of false things. And they argue with one another. And the book unravels this debate and this discussion and this argument. You ever try and preach the book of Job? I'm always scared. Is this one of the false pieces? Is this one of the true statements? So I just kind of preach the book of Job as a whole. I stick to it because it is a dialogue. Yes. And it's ironing out issues and problems. And Ecclesiastes is a very tight dialogue as he is talking to you about his life and his experiences. Now, wisdom dialogues are intricate discussions. It means they are super detailed, difficult to follow. You have to be incredibly careful with every statement that gets made in order to understand it, that address the complexities of life in light of common wisdom traditions. Both of the wisdom dialogues that we have in the Bible, both Job and Ecclesiastes, are books that are written to the wisdom community in order to address certain excesses in the traditions of wisdom. People who follow the wisdom traditions have a tendency to say this: it happens this way with the righteous and this way with the wicked, always, all the time. But a person who's actually living life says, not so fast. It doesn't actually always work that way. Mm-hmm. And so the wisdom schools, as they begin to debate wisdom and the ways of life, they have to confront not just what ought to be, but they have to confront what is, and to help people navigate it. And so these dialogues come into the wisdom tradition to address the wisdom community. These books are not written to fools. A fool that has Ecclesiastes in his hands is going to walk away saying, drink myself drunk every day, sleep with every girl that walks across my path, and woohoo! That's what a fool does with Ecclesiastes, because the fool is incapable of entering in, even at the base level, of a wisdom discussion. This book is written to the wise. It's written to those who have already embraced the fear of Yahweh and have already dedicated their life to a life of wisdom. And so it is written to them to help them correct and tinker with their thoughts about wisdom. Now, so as a movement, wisdom concerns the traditions and the schools of the ancient sages who dedicated their lives to discovering and teaching paths of truth leading to a successful life before God in this world. Now, as a concept, what is wisdom as a concept? So we looked at it as a genre. It's this literature that these people write that's supposed to help you work your way through the life. And then as a movement, focusing on those people and those traditions, those schools. Now, as a concept, what is wisdom? Okay? As a concept, wisdom concerns a way of understanding reality as God constructed it. He made this world to function a certain way. The concept of wisdom can be cosmological. It means it's looking at the world structure. Okay? Now, the Egyptians had this thing, what they call Ma'at. Now, Ma'at is this thing called truth, this goddess of truth. But the Ma'at was more than that. Ma'at was the cosmic and social order regulating all of existence. The pulse of goodness and rightness, imbued with inherent rewards and punishments. It means that God wove the world together with certain rules, not just material rules, like I drop this thing and it hits the ground, but with social rules. This is the way men work. Now, of course, men have sinned, and so the system becomes complicated, but still, people are designed to function a certain way. Societies function a certain way. Certain things work, certain things don't work. Now, people have a certain amount of free will, so you cannot always anticipate what people will do, but Ma'at is this concept of this stuff of the world, of how God built the world to work, and when you get with it, and you understand it, and you live your life in keeping with it, you're blessed, you prosper, usually, and when you fight against it, it has a way of hurting you, automatically. God doesn't have to follow you around going, I'm going to punish you for that, I'm going to punish you for that, I'm going to punish you for that, because your actions have their own rewards and punishments woven into them, because God has woven the world a certain way. Now, I'm not a strong swimmer. And so I remember the first time I went with a friend of mine. We went to a big water park, and we went to the wave pool. The wave pool's got this current, right? Somehow, I don't know how it was. It's just the way I am. I got going the opposite of the wave. When the wave went high, I was at the bottom of the pool. And I'd start to swim up. And as I'm swimming up, trying to get to the top, the low part would hit me. And the water would drop out beneath me, and I would literally crash into the bottom of the pool. Bam! I'm on the bottom, holding my legs as the water goes up again, and I'm now at the bottom again. When it goes up, I'm down. When it goes down, I'm up. And it was beating me to death and drowning me. And I'm honestly sitting there. I'm sitting there as this wave pool is just beating the crud out of me, thinking, I'm not going to get out of here alive. Well, this is what Ma'at is. There's a pulse to life. When all of a sudden I'm with it and I'm riding the wave, and I'm like, oh, I see why people like this. But when you're going against it, life has a way of beating you to death. And you walk around. It says in Proverbs that the fool is like a man walking around in the dark, tripping over things he cannot see. They don't understand why their lives are so screwed up. They don't understand why their marriage stinks, why their kids hate them, why their neighbors don't want to be around them. They have no clue, because they are going contrary to the way of things. They have not learned to live life successfully and wisely. Now, wisdom is also anthropological. So we said that it's cosmological. It deals with the whole concept of the world structures. It's also anthropological, human. Wisdom is the human quest to master life by discerning the principles of Ma'at. All of a sudden, we say wisdom is that truth that's woven into the fabric of the world, that imbues our actions with their own rewards and punishments. But it's also the human quest of trying to master that, trying to figure it out. Okay, wisdom speaks of what ought to be, but it also deals with what is all the time. And this can be confusing for us, because you read Proverbs, they seem to contradict one another. Wisdom speaks of what ought to be, tells you how you ought to live, prescriptive, but it also deals with what is, always. Now, there are Proverbs that you just sit there and think, that shouldn't be a Proverb. A bride opens doors for a man. Everywhere he goes, he prospers. What? Bribery? The Proverbs are telling me I should bribe my way through? Ah! It's simply recognizing this is the way the world works. It says, the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, but chance and circumstance overcome everybody. You go, well, that's not right. The fastest guy ought to win. But that's just not reality. Chance and circumstance have a way of overtaking. There are people who sing better than anybody I've ever heard cut an album, and nobody knows who they are. It's just not the way. So it speaks of what ought to be, but it deals with what is. It's associated with practical knowledge of the ways of the world in almost every area. It talks about religion, how to get along with God, government, kingship, and citizenship issues, civil management, how to deal with evil men, business, how to deal with money, the trades, just simply how to be good at what you do, how to take this metal and turn it into what I want it to turn it into. A person knows how to get things done in the world as it works. So I know how to take this metal and make it into what I want it to. I know how to take this relationship and make it what I want it to be. I know how to take this business and make it what I want it to be. I know how to be a king and run a society. How to get things done. I know how to be a judge and run a court and discover justice. I know how to make things happen right in the world. Social matters, family matters. In some contexts, wisdom is even used to work evil. Jonadab in the Bible, who is David's son's, Ammon's best friend, knows how to manipulate political situations in order to get what he wants. And so he helps him to manipulate his half-sister so that he can rape her. Oh, ends up getting him killed, by the way. But still, he says, I want to accomplish this end. I don't know how to get it, but this guy does know how to get it because he knows how to work the system. This is also, at times, a form of wisdom. A person who simply knows how to get it done. Wisdom literature looks life in the face. It helps the young make their way through it as easily and as honestly as possible, avoiding its pitfalls, practicing general principles which can destroy or else establish a person's life under the sun. Wisdom literature is not divine promise. Wisdom literature is general principles. There are no guarantees. And if anything that Ecclesiastes teaches us, and the book of Job teaches us, which is the great dialogue corrective, is that there are no guarantees. When a wisdom student begins to believe that his principles are divine promises, he's all gone down the wrong path. Because that's just not the way life works. And this is what Ecclesiastes is going to attempt to teach us today. Now, a man with wisdom knows how the world works. He knows how to accomplish particular ends within it. There are some people that are very wise in one area, but not very wise in another. There are guys that know how to turn businesses into mega money machines, but have no idea how to get along with their wife. And there are other people who really stink at business and do not know how to make money. They're really great at relationships. That's the one thing they really do well. Their neighbors love them, their kids love them, their wives love them. Everybody just loves them. That is a form of wisdom that should never be undermined. Wisdom involves a keen observation of the cause-effect structures inherent in the world, tracing out those rewards and punishments inherent in particular actions. From a divine perspective, from a cosmic perspective, we see that there is this wave of truth that has its own rewards and punishments. From a human perspective, we have to try and figure that out by observing the world, by actually watching what happens. Now, we're in a really bad situation right now that the media and Hollywood has so dominates people's visions of the world that people are no longer allowed to even witness the true cause and effects of their actions because we write scripts in which we take a person, make them commit an action, and write any ending we want for it, because we're not held to reality. And so people can no longer see the true impact of their actions because perpetually flashed in front of their face are false cause-effect structures that are driven by liberal agendas and not by the truth of the world, not by the mat, the truth of God woven into the fabric of reality. This is a problem.
Yes.
A really big problem. All of a sudden, we don't even have the hope of seeing through to what the real causes and effects are of the world. But in this world and its natural laws are still the product of the Divine One, who has revealed himself and his intentions through his creation in both sacred narrative and the observable world. Okay. Now, in the wisdom tradition, a tension emerges over the freedom of Yahweh, which means that we cannot put Yahweh in a box. Yahweh is God, the creator of the world. Okay. He knows more than we do, understands more than we do, and our little wisdom principles that we attach cannot hem him in. You cannot handcuff him to those because these wisdom principles are not the whole story. He knows more, he sees more. So this is the second one, the unsearchableness of wisdom. That as much as we learn about the world, as much wisdom as we gain, we never have all of it. And this is one of the big points of Ecclesiastes. Nobody is smart enough, nobody is wise enough, except Yahweh, to figure it all out and to understand how everything works. We cannot believe, you can't quote scriptures at Yahweh and say, I got ya, ha 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 ha, you gotta give me what I want, because I just read the verse. No. Nothing that we do is intended to manipulate Yahweh into making him get behind our purposes and our plans. Everything about our worship, everything about our religion is about turning us into people who get behind his purposes and his plans. Amen. And that is true success in life.
Amen.
Okay. The frequent reversal of fortunes. Anybody that's smart enough looks around and says, there is a vanity that takes place on the earth, that there are righteous people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the wicked. And there are wicked people to whom it happens according to the deeds of the righteous. People who do everything right, and nothing but bad things happen to them. And people that do nothing right, they're animals. And all they do is prosper, and prosper, and prosper. Yeah. This is why we wrote Psalm 73, right? Yeah. I almost slipped. I almost fell. I looked at the wicked and I said, this ain't right. It's not the way it's supposed to be. Yeah. This is the wisdom dialogue. Indeed, Ma'at often fails to punish and reward. Therefore, wisdom comes to be embodied in the wisdom traditions as the generations pass, as the dialogues begin, as the people who dedicate their life to observing the world, trying to discern the ma'at, that flow of truth in the world, as they from generation to generation to generation pass on knowledge, debate and discuss. Wisdom comes to be embodied in the fear of Yahweh, where ultimate justice is eschatological and eternal. It's no longer, I know that if I do A, B, C, that I will get X, Y, Z every time, no matter what. It says, most of the time when I do A, B, C, I will get X, Y, Z. But ultimately, we are in the hands of Yahweh, who knows more, sees more. And in the end, all justice will prevail. Every wrong will be punished. Every right rewarded. He sees all. He knows all. Which brings us to the wisdom dialogue in Ecclesiastes, particularly the topic of chapters 9:1-8, death. As a wisdom dialogue, Ecclesiastes needs to be read entirely. I already said that. The whole thing. Very difficult to take a piece of Ecclesiastes out of Ecclesiastes. You've got to really interpret everything you read in Ecclesiastes in light of the whole conversation. Because every statement relates to the whole discussion. A discussion is carried on not for the foolish, reminding of that, but for the wise. Now let's be honest. Ecclesiastes is nuts. It's not what we're accustomed to. There's some statements in here that are very hard to deal with. Okay, it's caused a lot of trouble for the faithful for more than 2,000 years. What does he mean everything's vanity and purposeless? Isn't this an accusation of God? So what's he do? The sage declares everything meaningless vanity. We don't want to hear that. We want to hear that our lives have eternal purposes and every single thing we do, every minute of our days, is of ultimate consequence for the world. When the truth of the matter is that most of us will be born and live our lives and die and never make an impact on anything in any way, lasting of any kind. And if what we're hoping to do is to justify our existence because we impact eternity, the writer's basically looking at life saying, they're dead. And 6 months later, people don't even remember who the guy was. Now we have little stones and we carve our names in them forever. Woohoo! Now he pontificates on his frustrations over life under the sun. You've got to be very careful with the grammar of Ecclesiastes. He is going to go off. He's going to say, so I saw this, and I got frustrated, and I said, oh, there's no purpose to anything. Right. What are we even doing here? In one part of a dialogue, he's going to say, and so I was happy and contented, and I loved my toil. And 3 verses later, he's going to say, so I was depressed, and it was awful, and I said, there was no point to anything I ever did. Because he's pontificating. Right. He's bringing you on a journey. Bringing you through his depths and his heights as he has spent his entire existence as the leader of the wisdom community. Right. Trying to figure it all out and basically coming to certain conclusions in the end. Going through so many frustrations. He makes a lot of strange, seemingly contradictory remarks. Some of which appear to accuse God of wrongdoing. And this is an evil task which God has given the sons of men on earth. It's going to be a statement to make. This is an evil task that God has given the sons of men on earth. You should pull that out of context and try and read it. Right. No. Right. You have to understand what he means by evil. You have to understand what he means by vanity. You have to understand what these statements are and when it is that he's simply sharing with you about the experiences that he's had and the frustrations that he's had and the conclusions, many of which are false, that he drew in the past, which have now corrected. You have to get to the end of the book. As a dialogue, the sage takes the reader on a journey, on his journey, to discover what was good for the children of men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. His life pursuit. What's worthwhile? What ought men really to dedicate themselves to, considering how short life is and the fact that we are all on the way to the grave? We are all dead men walking. What are we going to do? As a dialogue, all things are ironed out in the end. In the end. You got to get to the end of the conversation. You got to be with him through his conversation, with him in his dialogue, listening to his frustrations, listening to his sorrows, listening to the lessons that he learned, good and bad, moving up to the end. The sage confronts the often confusing elements of life under the sun. Because life is frustrating. Life is confusing. Life is disappointing. And people that want more, people that hunger for more, will be all the more disappointed. That's the way it is. It says, with much wisdom comes much sorrow. Yes. I'll be honest with you. There have been many a day in my life that I envy people with a 70 IQ who are just content to stand up in the morning and breathe the air. They have nothing driving them to produce, nothing driving them to consume, nothing. They are just content to be. And I go, wow, I wish I was that content. I wake up in my morning and my brain starts going, gotta figure the universe out, gotta figure out the world, gotta figure out the world, gotta figure it all out. I gotta figure out who to vote for, and who's the best political candidate, and I gotta write that book, and I gotta finish that article. My brain's going, and it's filled, therefore, high hopes, high dreams, high big hopes, mean big disappointments. Means that I will come to the end of my days and I'll look at everything I've done and I said, what have I really accomplished and what was really worthwhile? So the sage confronts the often confusing elements of life under the sun, recommending certain perspectives, challenging others, and ending with the ultimate point of the dialogue. The end of the matter, all has been heard, fear God, keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man, for God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. Amen. Death comes to all. It's better to go into the house of mourning. This is all quotes from Ecclesiastes. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. Better to go to a funeral than to go to a party. This is the end of all mankind, and the living lay it to heart. You go to a funeral, and you look in that box, and you say, I'm there in a couple years. I'm there in a few short breaths. Maybe I'll be there next week. Maybe I'll be there tomorrow. Maybe I'll be there 50 years from now. That is my end. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of fools. The thorns are burning, and as they burn, and as they're consumed, as they die, they go crackle, 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 crackle. He says, that's the laughter of fools. Sitting there with a drink in their hand. And they just dizzy themselves and entertain themselves, and they avoid asking the important questions of life. You know how many people, we don't talk about death. We don't talk about death anymore. Right. Death used to be part of life's conversation. You confronted death. Oh, I can't bring my children to a funeral. I can't bring them to a wake. I can't expose my children. When my Sunday school teacher died when I was a kid, my parents said, Jesus came and took her away to heaven. Okay, is he going to come take you away to heaven? I just literally saw an angel flying in the room, taking her away. This concept of a body, this concept of death. Death is meant to be part of our conversation. Because every man needs to live his life in light of it, because that's where he's going. What we do is we dizzy ourselves with entertainments, we busy our minds, we play with our little toys and our baubles, we play our stuff and our music, and we're never silent. We constantly have conversation going on. We're never separated from the world. We never sit in quietness and contemplate the realities of life, contemplate our end, and ask ourselves the important questions. Why am I here? What is my purpose? Because the atheists are dominating our society, and this is what they have to say. You have no purpose. You're nothing but material. You're just meat. And when you're dead, you're dead. And there's nothing. And there's nothing of any purpose or any worth. But the righteous man says, I'm going to the grave, and then on to God. Death comes to all. And life needs to be lived in light of this eventuality. Now, what is the conclusion of the book of Ecclesiastes on the whole? Don't work so hard. Don't work so hard that you don't enjoy the fruits of your labor. This is something that he says again and again and again. What good is it to kill yourself working and never to enjoy one thing that you do? You can't take it with you. Now, I hope, when it comes my time, that I leave stuff for my kids. I do. And he talks about that in the book. It's a good thing. It's a good thing to be able to leave stuff to your kids. But to have lived your whole life and been toiling and working and never enjoy anything you have, because you ain't taking it with you. You came naked into the world, and naked you're leaving, and that's it. Enjoy your work. Because you're going to spend an awful lot of time at it. Do what you enjoy, and enjoy what you do. Some people do not have the option of quitting their job to go and paint pictures. They don't have that option. They can't sit around on the beach playing the guitar all day and get paid for it. And they can't get paid to play video games. So I'm not sitting there saying, quit your job and just do something you love. But I'm saying, find something that you love to do. Do it. And if that's not an option for you, find enjoyment in the things that you do. Don't sit around in horrible misery, torment. Find your chief enjoyment in family and friends. Because it's the relationships that you build here, the impact that you make on other people, that are of the most importance. It is good to seek wisdom, but you will never figure out the world, so don't break yourself over it. I tell myself this all the time. I am not smart enough to understand the inner dynamic of every single thing that's ever happened in the history of the world and ever will happen. That does not mean that I do not make myself nearly insane at times trying to figure it all out. But it's not going to happen. Why? God made it this way so that men might seek ultimate fulfillment in Him and not in earthly things. This is what Ecclesiastes says. God has constructed the world in such a way that men will never figure everything out because He does not want you to find your ultimate fulfillment in the stuff of this life. But to look beyond it and all of its dissatisfaction and all of its disappointments to Him who made it. To have hope in eternity. And then finally, back to our ultimate conclusion, fear God, keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man, for God will bring every deed into judgment, every secret thing, whether good or evil.
You've been listening to the Biblical Literacy Broadcast. If you'd like more information about Biblical Literacy Ministries, visit our website, blministries.net. When you visit, download a recent broadcast and learn of upcoming events. If you'd like to support this ministry, click on the support button at our website, blministries.net, or call 774-265-2453. And join us again next week as we continue our study of biblical interpretation.